It's hard to read the news these days without asking yourself, how did we get here? Fiasco is a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. In our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which resulted in a high-stakes stalemate, ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, a Medal of Honor Monday. And we are about to do a doozy of a Medal of Honor on this one. Remember, you can, by the way, we have other stuff this hour. We're going to talk about, well, more about systems, illegals. We have a whole bunch of emails we need to get to on all kinds of different issues. We have a lot of fun we're going to have this hour for sure. Before we do that, I want to do some Medal of Honor Monday stuff. Every Monday at this time, we read a Medal of Honor citation. Find a hero. Medal of Honor citation, and we simply read it. Read about the men, read about the deeds, read about what they did. And remember, you can email suggestions to us. You should know, a little heads up, there's a long line because people have been emailing suggestions for a long time. So if you emailed one and we didn't read it, it's not that we didn't read it. We probably just didn't read it yet. I mean, we might have thrown it in the trash, but we probably just didn't read it yet. This one was from November of 23. Guy emails in, Dear Meat Shogun and Whisperer of Menus, you may have already done this guy's citation already. I don't remember. I've never heard anything like this, but I thought it was worth submitting for Medal of Honor Monday. And it's the Medal of Honor citation, and I will get to it in a few minutes for a Joe Ronnie Hooper in Vietnam. I believe we have done this one before, but it was a while ago. We have no problem repeating them. Why wouldn't we repeat them? They're amazing stories. I'm going to give a little bit of background on some of the things that were going on during this whole thing, though. Okay, this took place near Wei. Wei. You've probably, it's spelled H-U-E. You've probably heard the name Wei, Wei City, Tet Offensive. You've heard of the Vietnam War, and you've heard about these things, these ideas. But I need to explain exactly what was going on and why it was going on at the time. Before I get to the Medal of Honor citation, just, I thought a little bit of background, a little historical perspective on it would be helpful. All right. So let's go to the most basic level. Vietnam War kicks off. We, of course, the Johnson administration, when I say we, the LBJ administration lied through their teeth to kind of kick this whole thing off. The whole Gulf of Tonkin and stuff. We won't go into it, but either way, we were involved in defending South Vietnam and trying to stop the South Vietnamese from being taken over by the communist North Vietnamese. South Vietnam, though, was a disaster. Their government was horrific. It was totally corrupt and awful, and the people hated it. And this will come into play here, there were all kinds of dirty commie scum in South Vietnam. And those eventually became the Viet Cong. Remember, the NVA and Viet Cong are two different things, kids. The NVA was the official army of the North Vietnamese, the North Vietnamese army. We're talking uniforms, guns, the works. The Viet Cong were different. They were the guerrilla force. They were the farmers and teachers and workers in South Vietnam who would work their jobs by day. And then at night, they'd throw on the black pajamas and go find a spider hole somewhere and shoot a Marine on the way by if you can. Booby traps, torture, mines, the works, lots of that stuff. Most of that stuff you see was the work of the Viet Cong, a very prominent, powerful guerrilla force in Vietnam, in South Vietnam. Now, this Medal of Honor citation took place in 1968, and it really took place during the Tet Offensive. What was the Tet Offensive? This is going to be very, very brief. We'll get back to politics. Tet, I'm not an expert on it. Just know that it's a holy day there. It's an important holy day in Vietnam. And because it's an important holy day in Vietnam, we thought things would be pretty quiet during Tet. and all the Vietnamese people moving back and forth leading up to Tet, it didn't set off any alarm bells for us because you always had people moving back and forth going into Tet. Now pause on that and let's talk about the Phoenix program, one of the coolest freaking things ever. It was an assassination program by the CIA, and here's what it was. The Phoenix program was South Vietnam, okay, Viet Cong. Its job, the idea behind the Phoenix program was locate and identify the leaders of this Viet Cong movement, the South Vietnamese movement, and kill them. That's really what it was. It's, I mean, straight out of the movies. It's really what it was. Find who they are, murder them. That's our job. Our job is to assassinate the opposition in South Vietnam. And it was successful up to a point. We'll get to that in a moment. They were finding these guys in droves and they were killing them. There were many, 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 many guys, though, many of these South Vietnamese leaders, these Viet Cong leaders, they had not been able to kill yet. They'd not been able to locate yet. There were all kinds of these guys, and they were having nightmarish problems in South Vietnam with this guerrilla Viet Cong force. They were blowing everything up. They were creating nightmare for us. And that leads us to the Medal of Honor citation. But I will say, to wrap up the little Phoenix program thing, what really helped the Phoenix program was the Tet Offensive. You see, the Tet Offensive, it was the commie all-in strategy to finally get rid of us in South Vietnam. It was coordinated, the NVA with the Viet Cong. They had planned it meticulously, and the idea was essentially this. During the Tet holiday, when they think we'll be sitting around, instead of sitting around, we will marshal all of our forces and we will rise up and we will kill all these Americans and South Vietnamese people who are against us, and we'll finally purge these people and take back our country. But what it ended up doing was all the dirty commies the CIA hadn't found during the Phoenix program, they came out during the Tet Offensive trying to fight it, and they ended up dying. So the Tet Offensive ended up eliminating most of the people in the South Vietnamese Viet Cong movement. Ended up being a huge win in the short term. In the long run, not so much. In the long run, it really soured the American public on everything, and things even got uglier from there. But whatever. Without further ado, let's read the citation for a one Joe Ronnie Hooper, a full-grown man. My word.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty, Staff Sergeant, then Sergeant Hooper, U.S. Army, distinguished himself while serving as squad leader with Company D. Company D was assaulting a heavily defended enemy position along a riverbank when it encountered a withering hail of fire from rockets, machine guns, and automatic weapons. Staff Sergeant Hooper rallied several men and stormed across the river. It was five men, by the way, overrunning several bunkers on the opposite shore. Thus inspired, the rest of the company moved to the attack. With utter disregard for his own safety, he moved out under the intense fire again and pulled back the wounded, moving them to safety. During this act, Staff Sergeant Hooper was seriously wounded, but he refused medical aid and returned to his men. With the relentless enemy fire disrupting the attack, he single-handedly stormed three enemy bunkers, destroying them with hand grenades and rifle fire, and shot two enemy soldiers who had attacked and wounded the chaplain. Leading his men forward in a sweep of the area, Staff Sergeant Hooper destroyed three buildings housing enemy riflemen. At this point, he was attacked by a North Vietnamese officer, whom he fatally wounded with his bayonet. To make a stronger point, the officer saw Hooper with the bayonet, turned and ran away. Hooper ran him down and bayoneted him to death. Friggin' awesome. Anyway, finding his men under heavy fire from a house on the front, he proceeded alone to the building, killing its occupants with rifle fire and grenades. By now, his initial body wound had been compounded by grenade fragments, yet despite the multiple wounds and loss of blood, he continued to lead his men against the intense enemy fire. As his squad reached the final line of enemy resistance, it received devastating fire from four bunkers in line on its left flank. Staff Sergeant Hooper gathered several hand grenades and raced down a small trench which ran the length of the bunker line, tossing grenades into each bunker as he passed by, killing all but two of the occupants. With these positions destroyed, he concentrated on the last bunkers facing his men, destroying the first with an incendiary grenade and neutralizing two more by rifle fire. He then raced across an open field, still under enemy fire, to rescue a wounded man who was trapped in a trench. By the way, Hooper was out of ammo and was basically had no weapon when he ran across that trench to go get that guy. Upon reaching the man, he was faced by an armed enemy soldier whom he killed with a pistol. Someone had to toss him a pistol. Moving his comrade to safety and returning to his men, he neutralized the final pocket of enemy resistance by fatally wounding three North Vietnamese officers with rifle fire. Staff Sergeant Hooper then established a final line and reorganized his men, not accepting treatment until this was accomplished and not consenting to evacuation until the following morning. His supreme valor, inspiring leadership, and heroic self-sacrifice were directly responsible for the company's success and provided a lasting example in personal courage for every man on the field. Staff Sergeant Hooper's actions were in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself and the U.S. Army. And you should know that he also has two silver stars and six bronze stars, and he is credited officially with killing 115 Vietnamese soldiers. And while he did not lose his life that day, he did lose his life to the alcoholism that followed not long after he came back. And I feel like it's appropriate to play that man Taps. Man, what a stud. Demons got him in the end, but what a stud. All right, let's do some emails before we get into the genocidal climate cult. Chalk, they have a male vitality stack. I think it probably is for everyone but Joe Ronnie Hooper. Joe Ronnie Hooper was not lacking in testosterone. I never knew the man, but that much I know. In fact, maybe they should change the male vitality stack to the Joe Ronnie Hooper stack. For us mortal men, we need testosterone, especially because we drink estrogen. It's in the waters. It's in the plastics. It's why T levels are dropping rapidly. And we need testosterone, but we don't want needles in our arms. We don't want big pharma. So what do? Well, we work out. We sleep. We drink water. And we take our male vitality stacks from Chalk, natural herbal supplements. 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days. Go get a subscription. Take it for 90 days and tell me how you feel. You'll never stop. I'm never going to stop. I'm on year three. CHOQ.com. Promo code Jesse. Go get your Joe Ronnie Hooper stack from Chalk. We'll be back.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. Of course, a Medal of Honor Monday. I hope you enjoyed that. Remember, you can email us, and you should, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We're about to get to a bunch of those before I get to these genocidal climate change Nazis. Commies, Nazis, whatever, same thing. Listen, country boy, we're getting some emails now. There's no place on earth, all the New Yorkers are mad at me. There's no place on earth, including Italy, and yes, I've been there, where pizza is as good as New York, especially pizza in the boroughs, and especially Brooklyn. My son is a Paris Island Marine, Iraq vet. I'm starting to think you're one of those Hollywood Marines. She says, Semper Fi, her name is Mary. These daggone New Yorkers are real possessive about their pizza. I like New York pizza. I was just saying, it's great. I'd go dirt water dog instead because I can get a great pizza lots of places. And yes, I was a Hollywood Marine, a real one. Jesse, you said we have to win a million battles and we won one. It's a small one, but perhaps it will encourage others to fight back in their local districts. And he goes on to talk about this is in Shenandoah County in Virginia. There's actually a news article out there that, of course, tried to remove all the names of the Confederate stuff, Robert E. Lee and all this stuff. And they decided to get involved locally, organize, fight back, and now those historic American names will be restored. Guy says his name is Dave. Listen, you have a battle you can fight. I know we get frustrated. I get frustrated. You hear me? I get mad. I get down. And we feel helpless. And honestly, when it comes to national politics, it's not that we don't have any say. Our votes matter. Our effort matters. Our money matters. It does. It's not that we don't have any say, but we don't have that much, right? And it feels so far away, and we're so mad at these people, and we can't do anything about it. Nothing changes. But locally, you have so much say. So much say. You're mad about it? You want to fight the culture wars? You want to take back your country? I guarantee you there are wins that can be had in your area if you put in the effort. Not your neighbor, not the guy across the street. If you dig in, if I dig in. Look, I'm getting involved this Thursday, too. As soon as I get off work, I told you, I want to go home. I don't want to talk anymore. When I'm done, I want to go home, hang out with my family, and relax, and do my own thing, and watch documentaries. I have a big local political event I'm going to moderate. They reached out to me. They wanted me to get involved with it. I'm doing it on Thursday. And I don't want to go. I'll tell you right now, I don't want to be there. I feel obligated to do it. There are things we can do. I'm getting involved in a school board race. In fact, three of them right now. And in real ways, I'll put it to you that way. In real ways, I'm getting involved in a school board race. I don't want to do that. I have other things I want to do. But these are wins that I can have. Saving the country is a process, not an event. In fact, tomorrow, West Virginia, Maryland, Nebraska, you have primaries tomorrow. There are primaries. How many people are listening to the sound of my voice right now in West Virginia, Maryland, and Nebraska? It's a lot. Are you going to sit around and complain? Maybe you'll put drain the swamp on social media and then sit home tomorrow? Or are you going to go up and vote out your dirtball GOP incumbent? Shoot, Nebraska, they have that loser Don Bacon in there in Nebraska. And a good man. I've spoken to him. I've interviewed him. I'm promoting him flat out. Dan Fry is his name. His name's spelled weird. It's like F-R-I-E or E-I, whatever. It doesn't matter. But he's a good man running against Don Bacon in Nebraska. Are Nebraskans going to get up and vote for real change? Are they going to sit at home, complain about the GOP, and then go vote for the same loser they've been voting for? Or I don't even know what's worse. Don't vote at all. Just sit at home. Don't get involved. Don't go do anything. But then tell your friends on the weekend, nah, Trump will fix it. You fix it. You get up and get involved. Get involved. All right? We have more emails before we do that. Do you have any idea what it's like to have a dog that has digestive problems after every meal? I know what that's like because, of course, on top of everything else, Fred, our dog who's not a designer dog, Fred has stomach problems. He has a nervous stomach. He used to have bad problems after every meal. He never does that anymore now. Rough Greens was the solution. Rough Greens is more than just vitamins and minerals. It's an all-natural nutritional supplement you pour on your dog's food. It has probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidants. You don't have to just give it to your dog and hope your dog will improve.
you will see improvements in your dog, his coat, his breath, maybe his digestive system. You want a free Jumpstart trial bag? They give out free Jumpstart trial bags of it. Go to roughgreens.com/Jesse or call 833-33-MY-DOG. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Oracle.
You're going to love this one. It's a scream, baby.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
In the aftermath of a transformative election like the one we just had, it's hard to read the news without asking yourself every 5 seconds, how did we get here? That's exactly what we're always trying to figure out on Fiasco, a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. In our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which came down to a recount in Florida and ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. In many ways, it's the beginning of the story we're living through right now. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore, and find out how a statistical tie in the Florida vote count put the nation into an unprecedented holding pattern, during which American voters waited with bated breath to find out whether Al Gore or George W. Bush would be the next president of the United States. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, doing some emails before I get to these genocidal climate change nutballs here and kind of how that climate change crap is all the, it's the final form, the final boss of communism, if you will. But I want to get to some emails because I've been so lax and so late, just way behind. I don't know why. I get distracted by other stuff and then I'll read one email and I'll forget that I'm doing emails and I'll start talking about other, whatever. Dear Menu Whisperer, what was your favorite meal in the MRE or in the Marines? Can be an MRE or dining facility. Reading About Face and Steal My Soldier's Heart by Colonel David Hackworth. I think the rot in our society and military started a long time ago. What say you? Actually, I have to read that book, About Face. Everyone keeps telling me that's an amazing book. I'm going to read it. I already own it. It's just on my list. Okay, my favorite meal in the Marines. So I've told you before about how brutal a forced march is. It's known that we called it humps. They're humps. We're going on a hump. We have 10-mile hump, 20-mile hump. But a forced march. Everyone gets in formation. You throw a bunch of weight on your body. And you walk. You go hike. But you hike at an accelerated pace. And it doesn't, if you're on the outside looking in, if you've never done it, you really can't fully understand how grueling it is and how badly you suffer on a forced march. It's why so many of the elite units out there, the most elite units in the world, they will have brutally long forced marches as part of their qualification, part of their test to see if you have what it takes to get in. Go look at SAS, British SAS, Special Air Service, some of the big, baddest dudes on the planet, part of their thing. Some long, brutal forced march. Guys die on it. Here's a bunch of weight. Go walk. There's some hills. It just, your feet, I'm going somewhere with this. You would get blisters right away. Wouldn't matter how well you took care of your feet. The blisters would come. Your foot gets sweaty. And you'd want to try to care for it. You try to change your socks. But really, everyone knew when I was in, everyone just knew. I mean, yeah, it hurts. You're best just walking it off till the blister completely comes off and your sock and your foot goes numb. The numbness is what you want. So just gut out the pain until your foot goes numb. That's what a hump is. They're brutal. And they're supposed to be. I'm not complaining. They're supposed to be. And make a man out of you. And by the time you were done with a hump, your camis, you'd be wearing your camouflage uniform. Your camis, if you were wearing greens, or no matter what you were wearing really, but if you were wearing greens, you could really see it. Once you got back up to your barracks room and you were taking them off, they were so salty, you could flake the salt off of them because your sweat had come through and you'd lost so much that even all the salt in your body came out. You could stand your cami, like your top, you could stand it up against the side of the wall. That's how stiff they were. So we're talking about something that's brutal and draining on the human body. So for me, I would always, some guys did it differently.
I made it a priority. I was always worried that I was going to fall out or look like a wuss, and I never wanted to look like a wuss. So I made calories a huge priority for me. Just shovel food into your body. And so I would get up a little extra early if I had time, and I would go down to the chow hall. To this day, it's my favorite Marine meal, and I will make some version of this. I know I just hit the microphone with my pen, Chris. It was an accident. And I will make some version of this to this day if I ever get the opportunity. And whenever I do it, my wife is mortified. So I would get scrambled eggs. Remember, calories are the key. I get scrambled eggs, and I would have them put ham and sausage, whatever meat they had. I had them load every single kind in the scrambled eggs. I'd have them load all the cheese they could possibly load into the scrambled eggs. I would toast 4 pieces of toast, and then once the scrambled eggs, this big, heaping, cheesy, meaty pile of scrambled eggs was on the tray, and I'd have the toast ready. They always had, because you could get biscuits and gravy, they always had a big vat of sausage gravy there. And I had them go just dump gobs of sausage gravy on top of it. And it would look like death. It was the most fantastic thing in the world. And I believe to this day, I believe it is the reason I finished all the humps and I didn't fall out of them. I would just load my body down with so many calories. See, Chris said, how did you not vomit? Well, let me explain how it works in the Marines. And this is for you young bucks, you young aspiring Marines. I can't tell you how it works in the Army or the Navy or the Air Force because I'm straight. But I can tell you how it works in the Marines. You always have to show up 15 minutes early for something. On time is late. Remember, on time is late. So let's say you have a battalion hump that morning. So your whole battalion is going on a hump that morning. What's underneath a battalion? A company. What's underneath the company? A platoon. What's underneath a platoon? A squad or a section. I was in a mortar section. A squad. Okay, so here's how it would work. Let's say the battalion hump was kicking off at 7 o'clock. That's when we're leaving. Your company commander would tell you everyone has to be down here at what time? 6:45. We can't be late. Well, your platoon commander, he doesn't want to be late for his 6:45 appointment to go on a hump. He got to be there 15 minutes early. Hey, weapons platoon, we're going to be down here at 6:30. Then your squad leader, my mortar section leader, would come again. On time is late. We can't show up at 6:30. We'll be there at 6:15. But wait, there's more. You also have a fire team leader. Ours would be a gun, the mortar gun, whatever. He comes. He doesn't want to be on time. On time is late. We got to be down there at 6:15. So we'll be down there at 6 o'clock. So the answer to your question, Chris, about why didn't I throw up after eating that much food, even after eating that much food, you had an hour and a half, 2 hours before you were walking anywhere, buddy. You had all the time in the world if you wanted to just sit there and digest all that stuff. Jesse, is the Democrat effort to keep Speaker Johnson analogous to President Biden keeping Christopher Wray? I listen on WRKO in Boston. You keep me thinking and laughing through the night as I'm trucking all night long. I love that, and I love WRKO in Boston. What a sick station that is. Chris, we need to go to Boston. Boston's a cool town. I know it's run by a bunch of dirtball commies, but WRKO would welcome us. We'd go have dinner with Howie Carr and Grace Curley. They probably don't even want to hang out with me, but I just invite them anyway, and we'd have a good time. What, Chris? What? What food is in Boston? Oh, I was about to say seafood. Yeah, that's going to be a problem for you, Chris. I was going to say clams and shrimp and lobster, but that's not going to work for you, buddy. Maybe there's a robust kosher section of town. Maybe. Look, I can't be held hostage to what you're eating. I promise you one thing. I'm eating seafood when I get there. The rest of it's your problem, pal. Anyway, Biden keeps Christopher Wray. Well, yeah, why wouldn't he? But remember, Christopher Wray was never some Republican activist. Christopher Wray should have never been anywhere near the head of the FBI. When Trump did the right thing and fired James Comey, and it was the right thing to do, that was a critical moment in Trump's presidency. In fact, it was a critical moment for the United States of America. That was the moment where we needed a reformer. That was the moment. Trump had just seen what had happened, what the FBI had done to him. We were all starting to find out just how evil this organization is. That was the moment we had to have some outsider who could come in and view his job as cleaning up the FBI. Instead, we picked some guy. There's a quote out there, Christopher Wray saying it. He viewed his job as protecting the FBI. We picked the swampiest swamp creature possible. And yeah, why would he ever change? All right, let's talk about these genocidal climate change nutballs. Hang on.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. We'll get back to the emails here in a few. I promised you I would, and I will. I want to talk about a couple things here really quickly. Remember, you can send those emails into Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. So, communism, at its most basic level, is anti-humanism. That's why I call them anti-humans. I'm not the first one to come up with that. Many, many, many people have called them something similar. Solzhenitsyn, more specifically, called them the enemies of humanity. But at their core, they're anti-people. The entire belief system is anti-human. Humans are always the problem. If we could just get rid of X, this would work itself out. It's why, in so many ways, the man-made climate change branch of communism is really the final form, because they stop pretending otherwise. All the other ones, they kind of act as if they're just being more nice or tolerant or equal, but it's the climate change brand of communism where the veil fell. The mask is off, if you will. They just come right out and say it so much of the time. Communism's final form really truly is climate change activism. Climate change activism is communism's final form. There's a new movie coming out, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And they were, of course, interviewing these two actors, Freya Allen and Owen Teague. And no, I don't believe either of these people are intelligent enough to have ever read anything. So I'm not saying these are communist leaders. They're just useful idiots, apparatchiks. But it shows the mentality, doesn't it? Listen to this.
I'm fully Team Ape.
Listen, obviously, when I'm playing May, I'm Team Human. But I'm Team Ape. Freya's Team Ape.
Ah, why so?
I mean, look at the planet. Better. here we go.
Look at what the humans have done to the Earth.
Well, yeah, I dislike humans a lot. Yeah. You know, there's the odd one that's like, no. I mean, there are times where you see humans come together and you go, oh, isn't this lovely? And then there's times where you go, I absolutely hate us.
Anti-humans. I love humanity. I do what I do because I love humanity. People are wonderful. They're not an accident. None of us are. Every single one of us was created by God on purpose. I am as pro-human as it gets. And that's why I hate communists so much. They can't help it. At their core, they're anti-humans. Here's a headline from The Blaze. Scientist who contributed to UN climate report touts global virus as final solution for curbing emissions. His name is Bill McGuire. He's a professor at the University College London. And he has some wonderful quotes in there like this. Quote, if I am brutally honest, the only realistic way I see emissions falling as fast as they need to avoid catastrophic climate breakdown is the calling of the human population by a pandemic with a very high fatality rate. I'm not mad at Bill McGuire. Bill McGuire has echoed words we've played for you many, many, many times on the show. Jane Goodall, who's the one guy, I forget his daggone name, who went on and just talked about how we need to reduce our population by billions and billions. Oh, you have it, Chris? Go ahead, please.
We cannot hide away from human population growth. because, you know, it underlies so many of the other problems. All these things we talk about wouldn't be a problem if there was the size of population that there was 500 years ago.
Yeah, the size of the population 500 years ago was 90% less than it is now. Jane Goodall wants 6 billion people to die, and she thinks that's the solution. She's an anti-human. This is Dennis Meadows. Listen to this lovely soul opine about wiping out God's creation.
In one way or another, we are globally, we are so far above the population and the consumption levels which can be supported by this planet that I know in one way or another it's going to come back down. So I don't hope to avoid that. I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way. Peaceful. Peace doesn't mean that everybody's happy, but it means that conflict isn't solved through violence, through force, but rather in other ways. And so that's what I hope for. The planet can support something like 1 billion people, maybe 2 billion, depending on how much liberty and how much material consumption you want to have. If you want more liberty and more consumption, you have to have fewer people. And conversely, you can have more people. I mean, we could even have 8 or 9 billion, probably, if we have a very strong dictatorship, which is smart. It's, unfortunately, you never have smart dictatorships. They're always stupid. So, but if you had a smart dictatorship and a low standard of living, you can have it. But we want to have freedom, and we want to have a high sentence. So we're going to have 1 billion people. And we're now at 7. So we have to get
We got it. I do see all the damage this movement has done already. Remember, the damage isn't coming. They're doing it everywhere. The money, the damage, you see it everywhere. The brownouts, blackouts in California, you see it everywhere. It's coming. We're already experiencing it. But there, in a small way, I'm actually grateful for the climate change brand of communism, because they can't help themselves but be honest every now and then. All the other branches still act as if they're doing the right thing, and it's about saving people and equality, and they'll even use words that they know you love, words like freedom and things like that, but not the climate change people on a ground level, at the base level. They come out and admit it. Hey, man, we just kind of need a bunch of people to die. If billions of people would just go ahead and die, then everything would work out well in the end. That's how these people think. All right. Chris, I feel like it's been amazing tonight. I feel like I've been amazing tonight. What? You don't agree? I do agree. I also agree that we've fallen on some hard times. Let's talk about restaurants and credit card balance. Hang on.
It's hard to read the news these days without asking yourself, how did we get here? Fiasco is a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. In our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which resulted in a high-stakes stalemate, ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.